A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media, this is 91.3 KUAF, and this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. Ahead this Wednesday, it isn't too early to look ahead to the weekend. We do that on most Wednesdays with Timothy Dennis as he readies us for live music all across the region. This week's suggestions from Timothy in our second half hour this afternoon. After our show today, stay here for NPR's Here and Now. Today, former Columbine High School principal Frank DeAngelis has written his first memoir about the day 20 years ago he'll never forget, one of the first school mass shootings. Here and Now begins at 1, right after Ozarks at Large. Getting a driver's license for the first time can be thrilling or, perhaps especially for parents, a bit unsettling. Later today, the Bentonville Public Library hosts a program to help teens become safe drivers. This is for teens in grades 7 through 12, and topics covered range from texting to roadside safety. Registration for today's 5 p.m. class is required. You can learn more at bentonvillelibrary.org. With the official arrival of spring comes the blooming of flowers, shrubs, and trees. You may have noticed Bradford pear trees blooming in the region, and if you happen to have one in your yard, the city of Fayetteville would like you to cut it down. The city recognizes them as an invasive species that can choke out native plants that are more beneficial to the environment and wildlife. As an incentive, the city is offering one native tree to each person who cuts down a Bradford pear on their property within city limits. Earlier this week, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda visited the office of two of the city's urban foresters, John Scott and Melissa Evans, to learn more about the new program.
This is our first year. This is a rollout for us. The idea came from one of our Urban Forestry Advisory Board members, Will Dockery, and we just took it and ran with it. And we're so surprised at how much success. Our main goal for this whole thing was education about the invasive species of Bradford pear. And since we've kicked this off, the response has been overwhelming, and it's actually went viral out in there with the media and everything, and we're just kind of shocked at how far it's gone. I mean, I've gotten emails from Virginia, San Diego, New England. I mean, it's just crazy the response that we have gotten. It's also featured in Southern Living.
Right. Several national publications, USA Today. We did have an urban forester in Virginia ask us if they could copy our idea in their town. And we said, well, of course, go for it. So, yeah, it's really picked up traction. And it's great just calling out these trees for what they are and that they are invasive. And, you know, we need to try to get rid of them as much as we can because they're just not good for our environment.
It sounds like if you're getting inquiries from around the country that this is a problem nationally. Is that fair to say?
Definitely, especially in the South and the East. Definitely a national problem. I think other states have invasive problems, but they may not be the Bradford pear. But California, I'm sure, has invasive species as well, but just not particularly the Bradford pear. So
what makes it an invasive species? How did it get here?
Well, they were brought in because they thought they were sterile and they would not reproduce, and they were very much an ornamental tree, and they were really popular in the 80s and 90s. I think everybody was planting them at that time. But what they didn't know is they would cross-pollinate with other pears out there, like the Cleveland Select or any other fruiting pears, and then they would go out into the wild, and their fruits would actually be productive at that point, and then they would revert back to their calorie pear form, which is the original Chinese version of what they are, and that has thorns and everything, and now you see them out in the woods.
They colonize so fast, so quickly, and so easily, and they're not one of our native trees. And so what they do by, you know, spreading so quickly is they shade out, other native trees that we have that might be trying to, you know, grow up from the ground and just don't have a chance because the Bradford pear leaves out before many of our native trees do. And that creates shade on the ground, and it just doesn't give anything else much of a chance. Much like the honeysuckle that we see everywhere in the woods right now, too. It's invasive, and it shades out the natives. So that's another one that is good to remove.
So how do you know when it's reached a dire, you know, circumstance or a problem, because average person like me, I see it blooming. I'm like, oh, that's pretty. Here, it's spring. Yay. I'm excited. Right. I didn't know it was a problem. I mean, does it get to a certain point where you're like, oh, there's way too many. Is there a number? Is there just kind of eyeballing it?
Yeah, basically eyeballing it. I mean, the frightening thing is to see it out in the woods naturalizing. It's one thing to see it in parking lots or in lawns, you know, in front of people's homes. And yeah, it seemed to be the perfect tree and so pretty. But it's just devastating the way it spreads out into our natural forests, you know, and starts taking over there. That's the main problem.
You're offering people the chance to exchange their tree, I guess it would be a good way to say that. You want them to cut down the Bradford pear and you'll give them another tree. Is that kind of the process?
Yeah, that's exactly the process. Exchange sounds really nice, but we're saying get your axe out and chop down those Bradford pears, and then we'll have a native to swap you out for it. You can take a picture of your tree once it's down, email it to us, and we'll put you on our list, and we're giving away the trees on the 25th, the 26th, and the 27th, and there's details on online on that.
And of course, with this, we want everybody to be careful when you're, you know, removing a tree. If you need to hire help, that's a good idea. I mean, please don't get hurt. You know, be careful. And then also, it's a good idea to look up in the tree and make sure there's not a squirrel nest or a bird nest. Most likely there won't be, but we did have someone ask us about that earlier today, and we thought we need to make sure to tell people to look up. And if that is the case, you know, you just might want to wait until those babies have left the nest or nest is abandoned and remove it later. But you can still take a picture, you know, send it to us, tell us your intentions, and we'll work with the people on that as best we can.
Do I get a choice of what kind of tree I get instead?
Yes, it should be one of our natives. We're still working on the final list on that, but we have got the order in. But it should be, there's going to be some ornamentals, and there will also be some larger trees. But we're trying to swap like for like, which means an ornamental flowering tree. However, there are people who are not going to want that, and then maybe they want a little bigger one. So we're going to have some oaks on hand as well.
So how are you able to pay for this? Because I imagine purchasing the trees costs some money.
It does, and John might be able to explain this better than I can because he's been handling that end of it. You said we're getting 100 trees for about $1,000,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
You'd gotten a discounted price.
Yeah, we're working with their local nurseries, and they're offered us a good price. And then we have the funds are in our normal funding, so
yeah.
We have an annual budget, so we're working within our budget. So, yeah.
And we decided to start with 100 because we really didn't know what the response would be. Yeah, well, we had no idea if no one would be interested or we'd have far more people than 100 interested. And again, we've had good response, so we'll see. We've still got inquiries coming in and emails and photos. But yeah, we're not to that 100 mark yet. So there's plenty of chances to get your tree if you want to.
Yeah.
One thing I want to add too, sorry, with planting a new tree that people are doing now, you see a lot in the spring, is mulching your trees. And that is a good thing to do, but we just need to be careful not to volcano mulch, which means piling the mulch up around the trunk of the tree really high. The mulch should be pulled back off the trunk because if it touches the trunk and it's piled high, it's a good place for disease to set in, for insects, you know, to harm the tree, for rodents to chew on the tree. So it just really causes damage to the trees ultimately. And sometimes the roots will grow in that piled up mulch area, and that's not good because we want the roots growing in the ground. So you don't need very much mulch, just a couple of inches, and keep it pulled back off the trunk.
What are the requirements to be eligible? Fayetteville resident? Do I need to show a bill or identification or something?
Just give us your address, your phone number, your name, and the picture of your tree, you know, cut down, or your intentions to, but primary, we would love to see it cut down, which is weird for urban foresters to say and request.
Yeah.
That's all that's needed, and it's first come, first serve, so.
We chose this time of year for the Bradford pear because they're easily identifiable with that bloom on it, and the smell is another way to identify Bradford pear. It's a pretty noxious smell.
Is this the type of program that you want to continue doing? I know I have seen efforts to remove honeysuckle around Lake Fayetteville and obviously now with these trees, is there maybe a long-term plan that you guys are working on, that there's another plant that's on your wanted list?
Definitely. We were already decided, I think next year it's bush honeysuckle will be on our bounty list. And this spring, Melissa and I have been, you know, doing site visits, and it's so alarming to us to see the majority of all understory is bush honeysuckle anymore in our areas, especially out on Mount Sequoia. We went and visited a couple sites. We're just shocked at how overwhelming it is and how much it's taken over. It's really alarming.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Anytime.
That was John Scott and Melissa Evans, two of Fayetteville's urban foresters, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. For more information about the program, email urbanforestry@fayetteville-ar.gov. The 2019 NPR Tiny Desk Contest is underway. The fifth annual search for great undiscovered musicians from around the country launched last month, and the musicians selected by judges will play an NPR Tiny Desk concert, then go on tour with NPR Music. Deadline for submission is approaching. It's April 14th. And we heard earlier this week from the Tiny Desk team that no band or no solo act from Arkansas has yet sent in a video submission. And they have noticed. They reached out to us. And we know you're out there, great musicians. We've had so many of you in our studio. To learn more about the process, you can go to tinydeskconcert.npr.org. Ahead this hour, Lerone Bennett Jr. was born just across the Arkansas border in Clarksdale, Mississippi. He'd become an editor at both Jet and Ebony magazines.
As editor, Bennett would show an incredible skill as a writer and would also show a particular strength in African-American historical writing. In 1962, Bennett would take his many writings and compile a text called Before the Mayflower, a history of Black America from 1619 to 1962.
Raven Cook in this week's Reflections in Black in about 15 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
91.3 is supported by Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, which is supported by the City of Fayetteville and is dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook for photos and information. Additional support provided by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering a variety of living options from apartments to village homes, plus a daily calendar of activities and events. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org. Theater Squared presents the Arkansas New Play Festival, featuring 2 weekends of performances of new plays and local craft beer on tap March 27th through April 9th. After the performance, guests may sit in on a conversation with the playwright and cast and offer their perspectives on the work. Events and performances in Fayetteville and Bentonville. Seating is limited. 443-5600 or theater2.org for tickets and more information.
Every year, two dedicated scientists with the Arkansas Geological Survey spend 9 months mapping, on foot, the state's geological formations. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich met up with the team this winter, mapping remote sections of Madison County.
Richard Hutto, a geologist with the Arkansas Geological Survey, this cold mid-March morning is exploring a remote Madison County gorge, documenting rock formations for StateMap,
which is the National Cooperative Geologic Mapping Program, and that is a federal grant program that provides half the funding for us to come out here and map the geology at the 1 to 24,000 scale, which is geology of your basic topographic quadrangle map.
Arkansas's state map is divvied up into 950 quadrangle sections, each encompassing 60 square miles. The team tackles one quadrangle at a time. Hutto estimates that only 10% of the state has been geologically mapped since the project started up in 1995 in southwest Arkansas, shifting focus into the early 2000s to north-central Arkansas, where the Fayetteville Shale natural gas play would eventually develop. The two-man team working in Washington and Madison County in recent years can map up to three quadrangles a year.
It's just me and Gary.
Gary Hatzel, field mapping geologist with the Arkansas Geological Survey, hammers nearby on a sandstone bluff overhang.
So we hammer on it, see what it is. He takes handwritten notes. I take electronic notes on my GPS. We get a GPS position, and then basically we just move on to the next one and find the next layer above that.
Arkansas is comprised of five main ecoregions: the Mississippi Alluvial Plain to the east, the West Gulf Coastal Plain covers the southwest corner, the Washtenaw Mountains and Ozark Mountains span the western two-thirds, divided by the Arkansas River Valley. The Ozarks were once submerged under a vast ocean until Pangaea, the planet's first megacontinent, started to crack apart and collide, causing the Ozarks, a Paleozoic rock dome, to slowly emerge from the primordial sea.
Known as the Ozark Plateaus region, which would be the Salem, which is the lowest. It's in northern Arkansas.
The Springfield Plateau covers portions of northwest Arkansas.
Mostly the Boone Formation, which is chert and limestone, and that is heavily karsted, as you know. And then up here where we are, this is the Boston Mountains Plateau. It's the highest one. It's Pennsylvanian rocks, and that's even later. These are the youngest rocks in the plateaus, and it's mostly sandstone and shale, the Bloyd and Atoka up here.
Rock layers are visible as bluffs and outcroppings, half-buried boulders, and tumbled stream beds. Today, Hutto and Hatzel are working in the Delaney Quadrangle, through which a gorgeous, smoky green, unnamed creek cascades. Each quadrangle has a name. Recently, they mapped the Weathers Quad, hiking through the Kings River watershed.
We go up creek beds so that we see exposures of rock. This is the bedrock at the surface. Now, most other places around, that's going to be covered by what we call colluvium, which is the breakdown of the rocks and soil on the mountainside, or alluvium, which is the deposits in the rivers, you know, and that's going to cover the bedrock. So these are very special places when you actually have bedrock at the surface. And so that's what we're seeking out, and that's why we go up these creek beds, is so we can find that bedrock at the surface.
Hutto and Hatzel, much like early Arkansas explorers, pack in equipment on their hikes, a compass, satellite GPS, rock hammers to take samples, and field notebooks.
I have, of course, a camera. I have a sample bag, and I have my field notebook that's always with me. And then I have a bottle of acid that I can put a drop of this on a rock to see if it's got any calcium carbonate in it. And that can be a clue to what kind of rock it is, too.
And just in case, Hutto carries a Resque, R-E-S-Q, a brand of personal locator beacon if they get lost, which they say never happens, which is amazing given they are trekking through wilderness.
Well, he's got a GPS right there that actually has all the topographic maps in it, so he knows exactly where we are at all times, plus I have the paper copy of the map, and I can pretty much follow along just from the topography where we are. So, I mean, it's essentially impossible for us to get lost. We have great maps.
On their mapping expeditions, Hatzel says, I'll often see evidence of early Ozark settlements. Nearby here are two chimneys that still stand in the rubble of some 19th century homes.
Remnants of people. We do like to notice and observe rock walls and old homesteads and chimneys that we find. And I'm amazed by just how many of those we find in extremely remote areas. I can't imagine living that far out now, let alone 100 years ago.
Hutto, at age 52, has been working the quadrangle since 2008 and admits he's losing a little bit of steam, while Hatzel, age 34, has only been hiking the quadrangles for 4 years. Hatzel and Hutto do field work rain, snow, or shine Monday through Thursday and digitize data on Fridays at headquarters in Little Rock where they reside. Each state map grant runs from July 1st to June 30th.
Basically, we start out early July and do every week until we're finished, which can go till this time of year. Usually, we're done by March, I would say, but most of that time is spent in the field from July to now.
Quadrangle geologic data marks key rock formations and faults, geohazards, caves, and sinkholes, which are layered onto existing topographical maps. The team also notes significant springs and creeks.
There's a national hydrologic database that we contribute to with known springs. Of course, any man-made things like quarries, that's another place where bedrock is exposed. So we like to look at, quarries, road cuts, things like that.
Hetzel says they'll occasionally encounter wildlife.
Mostly deer, for the most part. Seen a coyote or two. See bobcat on the road sometimes. Never seen a mountain lion or a bear as of yet.
As a courtesy, the team makes contact with residents to let them know they're working on site. They don't want to trespass. A half mile up the mountain, they stop and record a bit more data.
It's 35, 51, 28.24, 93, 54, 37.52.
Hutto unfolds and shows a complete printed map of the Durham Quadrangle, a geologic region due west of here.
And so what's done in a layout is that is the same line work that you saw handwritten on the topographic map, only now we've digitized it. Each of the formations is color-coded, and so you have a key over here that tells you what type of rock is in each formation. And also at the bottom, we have a cross-section.
The cross-section reveals geologic layers and elevations. A reduced map inset block of the region contains 300 black dots, indicating just where the team has stopped to sample rock and gather data.
So this is all the data points that we took last year or 2 years ago on the Durham. So every one of those dots that you see are places that we've been on in that area to get this line work.
Richard Hutto is an avid blogger chronicling the mapping expeditions on the Arkansas Geological Survey website through fascinating photo essays. We hike on straight through some berry brambles.
As you're walking along, gathering your data, you can sometimes snack on blackberries all afternoon if you want to. And then there's been other years when the muscadines were plentiful in the fall, and we were able to eat those all afternoon as well.
Halfway up the ravine, Hetzel spots some Kessler limestone, a key rock formation.
The reason why we're always looking for the Kessler limestone is it is the very upper member of the Boyd Formation, and it is the last part of it. So when you go above it, you're in the Atoka Formation, and that's a major boundary line that we want to find and be able to draw on our maps.
Finished quadrangle maps can be used by property owners and developers to determine building sites, as well as by industry. Visit the Arkansas Geological Survey website to download maps for free or request printed paper maps on demand for a small fee. In commemoration of the 25th anniversary of geologic mapping, the Arkansas Geological Survey has published a state map calendar created by Richard Hutto, who also photoblogs about their remote expeditions, found at arkansasgeologicalwordpress.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And a reminder that you can listen to Ozarks at Large at any time. You can find recent editions of our show at ozarksatlarge.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast through services like Stitcher and iTunes. Our Segas at the Depot presents artist Esther Macy Nooner now through April 28th. In Well-Worn Landscape, Nooner explores the photograph as a material object of ink and paper rather than a window into nature. Opening reception Thursday night, that's tomorrow night, from 6 to 8. Our Segas at the Depot is located on West and Dixon in Fayetteville. Some of the cross-laminated timbers remaining from construction of residence halls on the University of Arkansas campus are now being put to a different use. They're part of a pavilion designed by a pair of members of the faculty of the Faye Jones School of Architecture and Design at the University of Arkansas. Charles Sharpless, a project architect at the U of A Community Design Center, and Jessica Colangelo, assistant professor of architecture, collaborated on the concept that won the 2019 City of Dreams Pavilion Competition. Colangelo says the project is called Salvage Swings.
I believe this is the seventh year Figment runs the City of Dreams competition for designers to look at how to design a pavilion out of recycled materials that can showcase sustainable building practices.
The pavilion is made up of a dozen identical swing modules, which can easily be assembled and taken apart for reassembly in other public places. A prototype can be seen on the south terrace of Volwalker Hall on the U of A campus. Salvage swings will be fabricated this spring and shipped to Roosevelt Island in New York City for installation this June. At night, the pavilion will be lit by solar-powered LED strip lights. The team, by the way, won a $7,000 grant and is raising additional funds through a Kickstarter campaign for the shipping and installation. To learn more about Salvage Swings, you can visit the City of Dreams Pavilion 2019 competition online. Colangelo and Sharples, by the way, partners in the architectural firm Somewhere Studios. Miles Fish, professor of music at Northwest Arkansas Community College, will discuss the life of Beethoven tomorrow night on the NWAC campus. It's a lecture titled Tweeting Beethoven. He recently told Katie Hendrickson on KUAF's Of Note with Katie Hendrickson that Beethoven had a particularly turbulent life.
We know that he had an alcoholic father. We also know that his grandmother was a chronic alcoholic. We know that he grew up in what we call dysfunctional households now. So we knew about all that. I don't think I realized the degree of heartache and pain this guy went through, especially when his mom died, his dad went off the deep end, and he was in charge of raising his two younger brothers. Now, he had been in Vienna for 2 weeks, and he was there to study with Mozart. And all of that had been set up, and all of a sudden he gets word that his mom back in Bonn, Germany, is dying. So he goes all the way back to Bonn and then ends up being there for 3 or 4 years after his mom dies because there's nobody to look after his brothers.
Fish has researched Beethoven's correspondence, and he says the composer did himself no favors later in life.
He could be a ruthless person. And he went through his entire life, I think, sabotaging his own relationships. There were only two that I can find relationships that he had back in Bonn that he continued through his life. Now, whether it was a musician friend, a composer friend, whether it was a girlfriend, and he had many of them, he always sabotaged those relationships. And we know this because we have so many letters that still survive when he would write and apologize. I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I behaved that way, but I did. Can you ever forgive me?
Tomorrow night's lecture will also include highlights of Beethoven's legacy, including the creation of his Third Symphony. And there will be music tomorrow night as well, 3 pieces performed by NWAC music faculty. The program is tomorrow night beginning at 7 in Recital Hall on the NWAC campus in Bentonville. It's free, but be aware, limited seating.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Born in Clarksdale, Mississippi, to Lerone and Alma Bennett in 1928, Lerone Bennett Jr. would write critical texts to help in the consideration of the African-American experience in America and abroad. A graduate of Morehouse University in Atlanta, Georgia, Bennett would go on to pursue graduate study at Atlanta University briefly before finding work as a reporter at the Atlanta Daily World. In 1953, he would become associate editor of Jet Magazine in Chicago, and later Ebony Magazine, where he would take on that same role. In 1958, Bennett would take on senior editor of Ebony Magazine and maintain that role until 1987. As editor, Bennett would show an incredible skill as a writer and would also show a particular strength in African-American historical writing. In 1962, Bennett would take his many writings and compile a text called Before the Mayflower, a history of Black America from 1619 to 1962, providing an in-depth examination of Black America. Before the Mayflower would receive critical acclaim and would be awarded the Capitol Press Club Book of the Year Award in 1963. Bennett continued his writings in African American studies with texts including What Manner of Man, a biography of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and The Negro Mood and Confrontation, Black and White. Bennett would continue to examine race relations in America through poignant texts such as Black Power USA, The Human Side of Reconstruction, 1867 to 1877, The Challenge of Blackness, and The Shaping of Black America. Committed to education and philanthropy, Bennett would sit on numerous boards, including director of the Chicago Public Library and trustee of the Martin Luther King Memorial Foundation. Bennett would also go on to receive honorary doctorates and literary awards, serving with distinction until the end of a life committed to service on February 14, 2018. Today, we honor the incredible life and legacy of a true historical pioneer, Lerone Bennett Jr.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can learn more about the series online at KUAF.com. Just search for Reflections in Black.
Okay, so as promised earlier, it is time to think about the weekend. We have migrated over to the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio where Timothy Dennis resides. And Timothy, what do you do for us on Wednesdays?
I let you know what's coming up this weekend in terms of live music.
Let's go.
All right, starting with Friday night, Stephen Seagulls is going to be back at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville.
All right.
If you're not familiar, it's not the actor. Although he is also a musician.
So it's not Steven Seagal.
No. It's Steven Seagulls. They are a Finnish-based bluegrass band. They're famous for their bluegrass covers of familiar songs, such as Thunderstruck by AC/DC, mm-hmm. November Rain by Guns N' Roses, and Sabotage by the Beastie Boys.
All right.
They are joined on that bill by Cluster Pluck, which is mm-hmm. a Southern Illinois bluegrass band. Tickets for that show are $20 in advance, $25 day of. It will get underway at about 9:30 p.m. Again, that's George's Majestic in Fayetteville.
All right.
Then a couple blocks away, or really less than a couple blocks away, at Smoke and Barrel Tavern,
right.
There's going to be a night of surf and rock, sometimes together, with the Yokohama Drifters and Ghost Cities.
Okay.
That is a free show. It's expected to get underway at about 9 o'clock. Again, that's Smoke and Barrel Tavern in Fayetteville. Still Friday night, though, but happening down in Fort Smith, Temple Live is going to have Rival Sons.
Okay.
See that stranger coming over here. You don't recognize him. I know you'll preach you well. You got a voice like sugar. Sugar in your tea. And he could sing you in a song. Sing it sweeter than me. Blind your eyes.
They are a Southern California-based rock and roll band. They've had a few kind of hits regionally. That show is $20 in advance, $25 day of. Gets underway at about 8 o'clock. Again, that's Temple Live in Fort Smith. Moving on to Saturday night, Smoke and Barrel Tavern is going to have Dana Louise and Noah Richmond's Little Monster.
Okay.
What's left to prove? I'm all out of sweet, let's get rude. And I love when you finally speak and the words just fall out, breaking the silence, an end to the doubt. These words feel good, but can't be.
They're both going to be full band sets, featuring a few heavy players from Springfield. That show gets underway at about 10 o'clock. Again, that's Smoke and Barrel in Fayetteville. Also happening in Fayetteville Saturday night, Drawing Blanks will be at Backspace. They are a blues-based alt-rock band from Fayetteville, set to have them in the studio next week.
That's right.
Simple love for a simple mind. I still need you all the same. Steal your love. There's no way to forget my name. With
also joined on that bill by the band Barra Barra. They're a Conway-based indie synth-pop band. That show gets underway at about 9 o'clock again that Saturday night at Backspace in Fayetteville. Moving up the road to Bentonville Saturday night, it's time for the monthly version of the House of Songs Songwriter Showcase. This month in Bentonville, they will feature Candy Lee and Elena Hoff locally. Mm-hmm. They're also featuring Tenpenny Gypsy, which is in town from Little Rock, and Kevin McLaughlin, who is in town from the Yukon, and he's actually been in our studio already this morning.
Right. Yukon as in Alaska?
Yukon as in, like, Canada,
okay.
Alaska.
The Yukon.
The North. The
Not
Great
the University of Connecticut.
No. Gotcha. No. Right. Y-U-K-O-N.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, a good collection of local, regional, and international artists. That has a $10 cover set to get underway at about 7 o'clock again that Saturday night at Bike Rack Brewing in Bentonville. Also happening Saturday night, but over in Rogers, the Time Burners will be at Brick Street Brews.
Well, that old moon is shining bright. When you want someone, someone to hold you tight, I'll be right here waiting patiently. So honey, stop and think of me. When you want someone to make love to you, I don't hang around with someone new. I'll be right here.
They now are here.
They are now here. They moved to Northwest Arkansas sometime last year. They were actually in our studio earlier this year. If you want to find that, you can find it at ozarksatlarge.com. But that show Saturday night at Brick Street Brews gets underway at about 7 o'clock. If you're not familiar with them, they're a husband and wife rockabilly duo. They're really, really good. Again, Brick Street Brews, 7 o'clock Saturday night. Also happening Saturday night, another band we've had in the studio earlier this year, Common Roots.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be at the Gravel Bar.
In Eureka.
At
the Wanderoo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They are a brother and sister folk duo from Fayetteville. That show gets underway at about 7 o'clock again. That is the Gravel Bar in Eureka Springs. Then also happening Saturday night down in Fort Smith, Hillbilly Vegas will be at Harry's Downtown.
All right, that sounds rockabilly to me.
More Southern rock.
Oh, okay.
They're originally from Fort Smith. They've gotten some national attention with some singles in the past, like, 5 years.
Little Miss Rough and Tumble never lost a race. Was a mulch for carrying a doll and always had a dirty face. But Daddy knew wouldn't stay that way for long. She was growing up way too fast, and then she'd be long gone.
That show at Harry's has a $10 cover set to get underway at about 9 o'clock. Again, that's Saturday night in Fort Smith. Okay, moving on to Sunday, it's time for the annual Isaiah Warford's Family Crawfish Boil. It's the fourth annual one, so that's why I'm saying it's time for it.
Okay.
It features music, crawfish, obviously, and a lot of good times. This year, they are going to feature Richard Burnett and Friends, the Creek Rocks from Springfield.
Oh, yeah.
And also Earl and Them featuring Jesse Dean and a few other special
guests.
It's
going to be a heck of a party.
It's going to be a heck of a party. $20 per person if you're wanting crawfish, $10 if you're just wanting music. All of the festivities get underway at about noon Sunday. Again, that's at George's in Fayetteville.
All right.
And then finally Sunday, there is a guy that's going to be at Eureka Springs, Eureka House Concerts.
Oh, yes.
Ronnie Cox,
that's right. He's going to be across the street at the Fayetteville Public Library Friday afternoon.
Right.
For a show there. And I'm going to do a live Q&A with him after he performs. That's Friday at the library, but then Sunday is the house show.
Right. So tell us a little bit about Ronnie Cox.
Ronnie Cox is an actor. He was in Deliverance.
Mm-hmm.
He was in one of the my first favorite television shows ever when I was a kid called Apple's Way. No one else has ever heard of it. It was for a couple of years on CBS. But he's also an incredibly talented singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. Mike Shirky's had him in here before. And just, I've never met him, but by all accounts, a sweetheart of a guy.
So you're interviewing him Friday afternoon at the library.
Right. He'll play music at the library as part of, I think they're calling it part of the Mountain Street Stage
series.
That's
correct.
That's Friday afternoon. He'll play at 2.
Yeah.
I'll talk to him after that. That's free, and then the house concert where he'll do the full show, I suppose.
Right, which, that's Sunday night. Again, it's at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Spring Street in Eureka Springs.
Right.
They have the meet and greet potluck at 5 p.m. The show will get underway at about 6. They're asking for a $15 donation at the door, but it should be a really, really good show.
And you may not think you recognize Ronnie Cox, but look him up on the web.
He's one of those faces that you've seen in about a million
things.
Very
talented actor, very talented singer-songwriter.
All right. Well, that's about it for this weekend.
Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you.
I don't want a new partner, and I can't face dancing alone, all alone. Come to my arms, little darling, and I'll waltz you home. I'll waltz you home. I'll waltz you home.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, Alzheimer's and Children, a program designed to help young people whose lives are affected by loved ones with Alzheimer's, is scheduled for this weekend. We'll have a report. Plus, the state of local and regional economies. Mervyn Jemaraj, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas, will offer analysis on tomorrow's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report with Paul Gatling. That and much more tomorrow on Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today we're in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio with Julia Frost. She's director of the Jones Learning Center, which is located at the University of the Ozarks in Clarksville. Julia, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Pete.
I've wanted to highlight an entity from the Clarksville area because it's very much in the KUAF listening area for a while. And we were just talking before we turned the mics on. I think this might be the first time that we've done that, so
I'm excited to be able to be the one.
All right. Kind of give us a little bit of history of the University of the Ozarks and the Jones Learning Center.
Well, the University of the Ozarks was actually the first college started in Arkansas. Everybody always thinks it was the University of Arkansas, but it wasn't. Started at Cane Hill and then eventually moved to Clarksville. The Jones Learning Center was started in 1971. It was the first program of its kind established at a college in the country for students with learning disabilities. There were some forward-thinking members of the Board of Trustees at that time who saw that there were individuals, young people, who were smart but couldn't score the scores on high-stakes tests that they needed in order to be accepted into college. They couldn't figure out why. Well, that was before anybody had even come up with the term learning disabilities. So, and they weren't getting any kind of accommodations on those tests. That's why they weren't scoring high enough scores to get into college. So this particular board member came back to the Board of Trustees, said, hey, what can we do to help kids like this? Can we serve them? And they said, well, yeah, this sounds like kind of one of our goals, one of our missions. We've always been looking for who are those individuals that are capable of obtaining a college education, but nobody's giving them that opportunity. And so they said, let's see if we can't serve students like this. We really were beginning to use the term learning disabilities in the country. They couldn't find a program to model this one after, so there were a couple of doctors at Children's Hospital at that time, Dr. John Peters and Dr. Sam Clemens, who were pioneers in the field of learning disabilities, and they helped them start it. It's continued since then, serving students with learning disabilities, ADHD, and in 2012, we started a program for students on the autism spectrum as well. So often, I have found that my students who can talk about what it's like, who can talk about their challenges as well as their successes, that can mean so much to a younger person who is still struggling, or even somebody their own age, who is really struggling with understanding who they are, accepting who they are, understanding their challenges, but also their strengths. I'm amazed at the strengths of some of these young people. So many of them just think outside the box. They're such amazingly creative thinkers. They have ideas that I've never thought of, and in so many ways are smarter than I am, and I don't have a learning disability or ADHD, but they've got so many more strengths and abilities, and it's just helping them to see what those are.
So it's from dyslexia, it's ADHD. There are many things that come under that umbrella of learning disability, aren't there?
Right. Learning disabilities and dyslexia, it kind of depends on what word you want to use, really.
Gotcha.
A learning disability and reading and dyslexia, people kind of use those interchangeably a lot of times. Those are those people who are bright, and for some reason, the part of their brain that the rest of us use for reading, they're not able to access. And we're not sure why. Sometimes they just need to be taught in a different way. And some of them can learn.
Right.
Once they're taught in a particular way, it may not be the same way, or usually it's not the same way everybody else has learned to read. But some of them can't. I mean, I see young people all the time who they've been, had every reading program known to man. It's just not going to happen
it's
for
not
them.
Interesting.
And so the way that they learn is by listening. What's fascinating to me, I have one child who didn't have any learning disabilities. I have another one that has really challenges learning with learning disabilities. And the one that with the learning disabilities, there was never time in the day for all those extra things. There's an extracurricular activities because we spent so much time studying, which is so, you know, so difficult for those kids. It's like he kind of missed part of his childhood that my other son was able to experience. But I think what's so amazing about our program is here are these young people who are capable of completing college as long as we give them some compensatory strategies, give them some ways they can learn, make sure that they've got everything auditorily, make sure that they can take their tests with extended time, that they can have someone read to them, or they can somebody to take dictation from them, or a computer to take dictation from them, and they can show what they know. It's just amazing.
I think what we're seeing is equity in education.
That's right. Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Julia Frost, director of the Jones Learning Center at the University of the Ozarks. If someone wants to know more, what's the best way?
Yeah, right.
Facebook, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, the best way, if you want to know more, you can go to our Facebook page, Jones Learning Center at ozarks.edu. You can call us 479-979-1403. Or you can email us, just jlc@ozarks.edu.
Julia Frost, director of the Jones Learning Center at the University of Ozarks, thank you so much.
Thanks, Pete. It was great to be here.
As always, if something cool in your neighborhood taking place, let me know about it. My email is pete@kuaf.com. The Community Spotlight on 91.3, where local matters.
This morning, the University of Arkansas announced music industry legend Al Bell and architect Wilhelmina Chris Hinton Lee will receive honorary degrees from the University of Arkansas during the all-university commencement ceremony that will take place Saturday, May 11th in Bud Walton Arena on the U of A campus. Both are leaders in their respective fields, and both have strong ties to the state of Arkansas. Al Bell is a member of the Arkansas Business Hall of Fame. He was the 2018-19 McElroy Family Visiting Professor in the Visual and Performing Arts at the University of Arkansas. Hinton Lee, honored in 2012 with a University of Arkansas Distinguished Alumni Award, will be the guest speaker for the all-university commencement. It takes a big team, to put together a show like Ozarks at Large. Contributors today included Antoinette Grajeda, Timothy Dennis, Jacqueline Froelich, and Zuzanna Sitek. Timothy Dennis also mastered the show for us today. Reflections in Black is written and hosted by Raven Cook. It's produced by Lee Wood at KUAF. You can hear Reflections in Black most Wednesdays on Ozarks at Large. Additional content for our show provided by Katie Hendrickson. You can hear Of Note with Katie Hendrickson every Sunday through Thursday evening at 8 on 91.3. And bonus, you can hear Of Note with Katie Hendrickson every Sunday through Thursday morning at 9 on KUAF2. That's our around-the-clock, 24-hour-a-day classical music station. You can find out more about KUAF2 at KUAF.com. And Community Spotlight is produced by Pete Hartman inside the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at KUAF. A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Tahlequah. Music for the end of many of our shows, curated by Antoinette Grajeda. And for this show, she has selected a song that Sean James recorded just for us at the Carver Center for Public Radio. The song, Who Did That to You? Sean James will be at George's Majestic Lounge Monday night. It's part of his national The Dark and the Light tour. You can find out more about the show at georgesmajesticlounge.com. You can find out more about Sean James and his music at his Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow.
Call the police, call the call.